Greetings, Earthlings. Welcome to Astro Q&A with Victor Kerr. Question one.
How does astrology work? What's the main idea?
My book, The Beautifully Rational Philosophy of Astrology, is all about that. Essentially, astrology is a language. It's a sign language, it's a body language that the universe, Mother Nature, uses to communicate with us, to let us know what karmas are bearing fruit in this lifetime. Karmas are the results of deeds and decisions that we've done in the past. They're the reaction to the actions that we've done in our past lives. So the planets don't do anything to us, no more than the hands on a clock make time go forward. The hands on a clock indicate what the time is, and similarly, the planets indicate what the karma is. And they do that by using a very simple, natural symbolism. Just like any language, it's made of a few basic words, but the way that you can put those words together into new words and then into sentences and paragraphs and chapters becomes very complex. So similarly, astrology has about 33 fundamental symbols, symbolic words, you could say. But the number of ways that you can combine all those makes it become very sophisticated.
Question two.
How reliable is astrology?
This is another topic that my book is all about, The Beautifully Rational Philosophy of Astrology. Astrology is reliable, but very difficult to use. It's a lot like predicting the weather. We know all the basics of how weather works, but when you actually get to the real world and try to predict whether there's going to be a storm and which direction it's going to go, there's so many variables, there's so many things to consider, that even though you know all the basics and all the basics are reliable, it becomes practically impossible to get it exactly right. Astrology is really just like that. The basic symbolism is extremely reliable, and general predictions and overviews are pretty easy to get reasonably accurate. But when you come down to the exact real-world situations, like, am I going to get a raise tomorrow and how much is it going to be? It's practically almost impossible to consider all the variables involved and get the correct answer every single time. So if you use astrology wisely, knowing that, then you'll find it to be very reliable if you have a good astrologer. If you have a good astrologer, it's about as reliable as predicting the weather, which, although they never get it exactly right, they always get it pretty close.
Question three.
Is astrology a satanic illusion? And those who believe in it are going to hell.
Hey, that's another topic that's explored in depth in my book, Beautifully Rational Philosophy of Astrology. So if let's just give the Bible the benefit of the doubt and explain that whatever negative statements it has about astrology, probably what it's trying to communicate is that people shouldn't try to be smarter than God. See, some people approach astrology as a way to cheat their destiny, as if they can learn about what's going to happen beforehand, and then they can step out of the way and change their destiny and avoid it. So that's like trying to be smarter than God, because the ultimate authority behind destiny is God. So if you're trying to sidestep your destiny, it's like trying to be smarter than God and outsmart God. And that's kind of a little bit screwy. So the Bible would justifiably speak against that. But most people don't use astrology like that. Most of us use it as a way to know God better, to understand our destiny better, to live in better harmony with it. And so that's probably why the Bible also has many positive statements about astrology and astrologers, and positive examples of how it was used.
Question four.
Can we know the sexual orientation of a person through his birth chart?
Sure, that should be doable. What you would do is first you look at the main pillars of the chart, especially the sexual symbols. And you see how those align with the gender and nature of things, like the planets and the signs. So among the signs, the dual signs are particularly suitable for blurring boundaries. And amongst the planets, according to Paladipika, which is the best book in my opinion for interpretive purposes, there are the nine planets are grouped into three categories of genders, three. And then there's three variations within each of these three genders. The men, the males, start with Mars. Mars is like a 18-year-old man. And then the Sun, he's like a mature man who you can rely on. And then Jupiter is like a wise man, kind of like a grandfather. So Mars like a bachelor, Sun's like a father, and Jupiter is like a grandfather in terms of maleness. And then the females, you have Venus being like an 18-year-old girl, and then you have the Moon being like a mature woman, like a mother, and then you have Rahu being a wild woman. And then you have the three who are transgendered, third gender. Those three begin with Mercury, and then Saturn, and then Ketu. Mercury is transgender or third gender because he's simply so balanced. Mercury is technically a male, but behaves in a feminine way because he has this balance. Then you have Saturn. Saturn is technically female, but behaves like a male. And then you have Ketu, who has no interest whatsoever, asexual. So if you can stick with those, and you can see how do the main pillars of the chart and the sexual points in the chart align with those symbols. Here's Ian McKellen. You can see that a dual sign rises. You can see that the Sun and the Moon are in dual signs also. So all three main pillars are in a dual sign. You can see that his first house lord, the Lord of Self, is with Saturn, who's one of the transgender planets. And you can see that his seventh lord from the Moon is that same first lord with the transgendered Saturn, seventh lord being the house of relationships with others, especially spouse. You can see that the seventh lord from the ascendant is with another transgendered planet, Ketu, and with Venus, a very female planet for a man. That would be interesting. And you can see that in his Navamsha, Gemini rises, another dual sign, which belongs to Mercury, a transgender planet, and transgendered Mercury is ascending in that Gemini. Other little supporting things you can see is just simply the fact that Mars is very weak, because if you notice, it's at 0 degrees of its sign. And so that means masculinity is lowered and Venus is very strong. So that means that the primary source of femininity is prominent. And other little things, you can see that the sexual orientation would be a noticeable fact about the person, or a known fact about the person, because the eighth lord is in the 10th house. And you could see that the sexual orientation would be a little unusual or problematic in the modern social setting, because the Moon's eighth lord is in the Moon's eighth house. We can also look at Jodie Foster's chart. These are two people that I just happened to find who had well-known birth times. And you can see Jodie Foster's chart is really similar to Ian McKellen's. A dual sign rises, the Moon is in a dual sign. The Sun isn't in a dual sign, but it's very close to Mercury, within 3 degrees of Mercury. That Mercury is the seventh lord, so that means the seventh lord is within 3 degrees of the Sun, which is a major masculine symbol. So for a woman, that's an interesting situation, to have the seventh lord be very masculine influenced. Then you have, for her also, you have a dual sign rising in the Navamsha, which for her is Virgo, another belongs to Mercury again. And Mars is ascending there, which is very masculine, which is interesting for a female. Her too, you can see that the sexual orientation is noticeable or known, because she also has the eighth lord in the 10th house. And you can see that her sexual orientation would be considered unusual because she has the Moon's eighth lord very close to the unusual Rahu. So there you go. You just keep a few basic symbols like the genders of the planets and the natures of the sign, and you just see how they interact with the main points like the Sun, the Moon, and the Ascendant, and the sexual points like the 7th and the 8th house.
Question 5.
What are the symptoms of a bad Jupiter?
Well, bad Jupiter means there's going to be something bad about what Jupiter represents. So first of all, you got to know what Jupiter represents. You can read my new book that's going to come out soon, Essential Symbols of Astrology. You can even just go to my channel page and find the video that's about Jupiter. It's in the playlist called Symbolic Keys to the Planets. Then when you know what Jupiter is all about, if you have a bad Jupiter, it means one of those things or all of those things are going to be damaged. Now you have to figure out which ones are going to get damaged. And that's going to depend on how is Jupiter bad, what makes Jupiter bad. And it's also going to really depend on what else in the chart is strong or weak. If there are things in the chart which are weak, which are similar to the things that Jupiter represents, and Jupiter is weak or bad, then those are the things that are going to go wrong with the person.
Question 6.
What are the evil houses in a birth chart?
Okay, first principle everybody has to know. It's verbatim from Paula Deepika, and it's ubiquitous. Is that any house will represent good or evil depending on the circumstances that it's in. Nonetheless, there are three houses which are counted as difficult houses, maybe even evil houses. Those are the 12th, 6th, and the 8th. And the reason why they're considered difficult houses is because they symbolize difficult things. The 12th symbolizes exhaustion, loss of energy. The 6th symbolizes opposition. And the 8th symbolizes the unknown. But under the right circumstances, these houses can symbolize great things. Just a quick example, possible example. A good 12th house can indicate really wise spending, spending money on really worthwhile things, spending energy on really worthwhile things. A good 6th house can mean overcoming all enemies, not even having enemies, being well-liked. A good 8th house can mean that you know all the secrets, there's nothing unknown for you, you're very perceptive. So any house can make a good or a bad result, depending on what its conditions are. But the basic descriptions of each house sometimes are more difficult or easygoing. And so therefore we have three houses that we call evil.
Thanks for watching. Please subscribe, like, and share, and leave a comment below. You can ask your questions there too. And please visit my website, vicdecara.com, for readings, classes, books, links to my Facebook and blog, and all kinds of stuff.